I always look forward to these conversations. It's with Ben Fredrickson of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Ben, Fred Fridays on a Friday morning, and we have been doing this, whether it's been during a sports lockdown, shutdown, COVID, it doesn't matter. There's always something to talk about with Ben Fredrickson, and we're brought to you by Stratum. If you have a basement issue, make sure you contact Stratum. I had a chance to visit with Stratum yesterday, and they have jumped on board for the next year and beyond. Great people, and Matt Ford and his crew are just such wonderful people, St. Louis people, and they're excited, and I'm excited too. So if you have a basement issue, make sure that you contact Stratum. All right, Ben Fredrickson, good morning to you. Lots to get into, and good morning to you, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Dan. Unlike your college basketball game that you might have been looking forward to, Ben Fred Friday always arrives on time, never postponed, never canceled. We give the people what they want, but I do have to break some news on the podcast this morning.
What do you got?
My New Year's resolution has been broken already. I was trying to stay away from the Post-Dispatch office vending machines in calendar year 2022, and I'll be honest, Dan, I'll come clean. I did happen to eat a tasty cherry Pop-Tart on Thursday. I'm not going to lie.
That's bad on you.
I'll do better in 2023.
Wow. One weekend, not even, and
it's off the rails. There's no getting back. I mean, once you're off, it's over.
Yeah, I mean, this is on you, man. This is nobody else. This is entirely on you.
What are we talking about today? I feel like we have a potpourri of topics to discuss.
Well, I'm going to start with hockey. Perunovic, Tarasenko. You know what? You've got another Blues player out with COVID. So three of them with COVID. I would assume this is basically the entire roster now would have been hit with COVID, and yet they find a way to put a roster out there that'll be competitive. It'll be a roster that will find a chance to win. I still look at this Blues team that's very competitive, has a chance to win every night. I don't care who's on the ice. It's been a fun team to watch, but man, oh man, this team gets hit with COVID as much as any professional sports team out there right now.
Man, I sat there, and on Thursday morning, I came in, and Jeff Gordon and I recorded a video for the Post-Dispatch saying, hey, this team is now finally fully healthy. They've got all their guys back. All their contract money is back out there on the ice. And now the question becomes, how do they find and play with that same type of intensity that they had when they were, you know, stocked with Springfield call-ups? And before that thing could even post, now there's three guys out again. And I'm not laughing about it. It's awful. But it's just like they are the team of 2021-22, where you don't know who's going to be on the ice any night. And the fact that Tarasenko is now out, this is a big blow because he had been playing as well as anyone. He was one of the biggest stories, I thought, of 2021 with how well he'd played after the trade request drama, leading them in points and doing all kinds of great things. And now to have these guys out, these are significant players. So much for wondering how they will come up with the urgency with a full healthy roster and not rest on that. Now they're back in the adversity tract, and they'll have to figure a way out. The good news is they're used to this. I mean, Craig Berube has used more than 50 lineups so far this season, and I think they've had 9 guys make their debuts. So hopefully when these guys get back, they will have had a team that I don't know who else is left. I'd have to go through it line by line, but I mean, pretty much all these guys should be free from being tested for a while because they've all been in protocols. And I know the protocols are now being scaled back like every league is doing. So hopefully, if asymptomatic, and it sounds like Vladimir Tarasenko could be, hopefully he could be back sooner than some of the others. But you're right, man. We thought that the pause during the holiday was going to give the Blues a chance to really kind of turn the page on this as much as any team can. And now it's just another chapter.
It really is. And this team has been hit by COVID, again, I think maybe more than any other team in professional sports. One of the things, though, that it's shown me is the depth that they've had at the minor leagues in Springfield. And that part of it has been amazing to see just how deep this team is. I had no idea that this team and this franchise is as deep as they are. And that, to me, is the one bonus If you're going to say that there's anything bonus positive coming out of COVID in sports with your team that you love, this might be it, is that they're pretty good. They've got some guys that can contribute.
Yeah, and if anything else, if there is another silver lining, it's that Doug Armstrong has gotten to kind of flex and show off his talent for the whole league. So it's a good thing for the Blues to be able to have if they decide they want to move some pieces around at the trade deadline. I would imagine that the league has a lot of interest in some of these guys. You can't keep them all, and the Blues should be in kind of a buyer mode this trade deadline. And I know it's still a few months away in March, but few teams have had an opportunity like this one to bring up a bunch of guys and say, hey, league, we have all these talented players. Anybody interested in paying really good rentals or perhaps other deals that make sense for any of them if you want to make a move? Or you just kind of tout it as the long-term strength of this team. It's a credit to Doug Armstrong. It's why he got that five-year extension, that he finds ways for this team to be annually in the mix, despite, you know, the salary cap challenges. And the Blues spend to the cap, that's a credit to the ownership group, and they're in it or around it every year. Now, they still think that they have a chance to be a championship caliber team this year, so maybe that makes them more inclined to deal from that depth and even maybe grin and bear it and send away a guy that they feel like they may wish they have years from now if they feel like they can win. But before they can make those calls, Dan, they have to see what their team can do fully healthy. And they haven't really had a chance because it seems like every time they get up to the cusp of that, somebody else is out. So the good news is that's going to be the story this year, the depth. And that was what led them to the championship when they won it. They had a bunch of guys who stepped up and had little roles that popped up over the course of the season, and this year is playing out to that end. They've had to do it more often than they would have liked, but you have to be impressed with the guys we've seen.
I'm really excited about the announcement, and I think we're going to find more and more this upcoming season that people will be watching what MLS in St. Louis is going to look like. But I was really excited about the announcement of a coach now here with the soccer team and MLS and STL City and seeing what they're doing, because now it's starting to come to fruition. You're starting to see what this may look like. And I know you had a chance to visit with the head coach. I know you've written about it. So this is starting to take shape. I mean, this is actually starting to look like a team. Yes, we're seeing the stadium go up, but this is like, oh my gosh, we're actually going to have a team. So it's actually starting to look like, hey, we're going to have soccer, professional soccer here in St. Louis.
Well, we know the guy who will be helping put it together, and it's cool to hear them explain how this happens. And, you know, you hear Lutz talk about it, and, you know, there's kind of different ways of hiring a coach, right? You either hire a coach that you basically give the coach the keys and say, we'll do whatever you want in terms of style of play and some direction on the kind of players that we should go get, versus, hey, we're hiring a coach who fits our system. And this is very much the latter. St. Louis City SC has decided that it wants to play a certain style of soccer, and it wants to be this high pressing, on the attack, you know, create turnovers and score goals off of them, a transition type soccer team. And I think that's really smart, because I think the one knock about soccer from, you know, Americans who are slow to warm up to the sport is that, well, it's stagnant, it's staying around to watch, it's not enough scoring, it's not enough action. And this is the direct rebuttal of that theory. It is in your face. Prioritize defense, get after it, create turnovers, and go score type of soccer. And I think that it's going to really be attractive to fans here who are really into soccer, but also fans who are into St. Louis sports and want to get into soccer. So Bradley Carnell is on board because he shares that same vision. He believes in that style. It's what he played as a player, and it's what he wants to coach, and he can add to that. And they're teaching this style at the academy leagues, the youth leagues, and they want it to build right up into the Major League Soccer first team. And it kind of reminds me of, in some ways, to use like a very, I guess, redneck version of it, for lack of a better word. It kind of reminds me of, like, you know, really successful high school football teams have youth leagues in their cities that play this style the high school team plays. So you'll see guys going from, you know, third grade, strapping on the pads and Pop Warner, who are running the same offense that they are as seniors in high school, and they know it like the back of their hand. And that's kind of, I think, what St. Louis City SC is envisioning here. They want these youth levels to play this style. And now, for their first team, the first edition of it, they want to go get players that inspire those youth players to want to play that way. So they're not going to go out and look for these old, washed up, big name overseas stars who have lost a step just to take a big contract to come back and move the needle. They want to go get young guys who can play this way, and it's exciting. And what they are selling is, with the hire of Bradley Carnell, is that they're going to do this, and they're going to have this kind of be the key to their identity. He's played multiple places. He's coached multiple places. He's got 5 years in Major League Soccer, which is really important to the ownership group and the sporting director, that he is experienced with MLS. He knows the ins and outs of it. And I think that what really put him over the top was he was an assistant in New York. That team had a head coaching change. He stepped in as the interim. The new coach had longer wait time than expected because of a visa issue. And he took a team that was a losing team when he was promoted to the interim coach and took them to the playoffs, which it's not easy to do as a head coach, let alone as an interim where no one knows if you're the guy or not. So I think that was what really sealed the deal. And it sounds like, based off of what Carolyn Kendall Betts and others said, that there was a lot of competition to get him, and they feel pretty good that he picked them.
You know, Ben, we hear so much about Ali Marmol. We hear a lot about Craig Berube. But what about this head coach? And on a personal level, just finding out about the person, what did you learn about, if anything, about this young man that's going to be the first head coach in St. Louis MLS history?
Well, I think he's got a good mix of kind of intensity and expectations for his players, but also has a kind of a modern approach to players as well. He wants it to be a player-driven team. He wants to hand over a lot of leadership to his team. He wants them to really have a kind of an ethos on and off the field. So that's one thing that he spoke a lot about. He really wants the team to identify with the city and vice versa. In terms of style of play, I think it's going to be in-your-face, aggressive. They want to basically play to the point of exhaustion every game, and there will be guys who are not cut out for that kind of play. There will be guys who either can or won't do it. So they're going to try to target players through scouting and the signings that they make that fit that kind of style. We know that he's a husband, he's a father. He really, within the past year, about 6 months ago, lost his father, who was a big impact on his life. And he told me part of the reason he took this job was because he's constantly looking to challenge himself, but also because he thinks that, you know, and reflecting on losing his dad, he thinks that this would have been something his dad really thought he should do, and also, you know, would have gotten enjoyment out of watching him take it on. So I think he's going to be fun for folks to get to know Bradley Carnell. He's very humble, very approachable, it seems like, and it goes by Brad or Bradley. So that was the first question we had to ask him. But I think it's kind of crazy, man. He's brand new. Ali Marmol, we know, but he's never managed a game. Craig Berube, who we don't talk about it much, but is in what could be the final year of his contract. I don't think it ultimately will be. But Craig Berube is now the longest tenured coach of a pro team in St. Louis, which is crazy to think about.
Hadn't thought about that. Speaking of soccer, the Missouri Athletic Club's Herman Trophy will be awarded tonight to the top male and female collegiate soccer player in the nation. That'll be awarded at the downtown MAC. And the Missouri Athletic Club does not get enough recognition for what they do for sports here in St. Louis, but nationally. And when you become a part of the MLS and then you award what essentially is the Heisman Trophy of soccer, I don't think this gets enough attention, and I hope it gets more attention as we move forward, especially having an MLS team. This is a big deal, man, to have the top female and male soccer player in college come to our town and do this. They do it in football, and to have this in soccer, it's a big, big deal, and I think the MAC needs to be commended for this.
Yeah, kind of the Heisman Trophy of soccer, and it's right here. This is going to be a big time for soccer in general, Dan. You mentioned the award. We've got the MLS team launching in 2023. How about the rise of the Billikens? I mean, they've got, if you look at the upcoming projections for the soon arriving MLS Super Draft, it's just loaded with players from SLU. I mean, like, stocked with players in the top 15. It's crazy. So whether it's collegiate or pro, I think it's going to be, we're entering what should be a pretty golden stretch for soccer in St. Louis. Another one. I mean, it's rich with it, but I think we're entering an era now where it's going to be a modern era of this, and it's pretty cool because I know that it means a ton to a lot of people. And I think that especially talking to Bradley Carnell, it was fun because he's like, yeah, everybody in this city is crazy about soccer. And they're approaching him at his hotel and they're coming up to him as soon as they find out who he is. And there's this enthusiasm and this excitement. And it's cool to see it operating and kind of percolating at all the different levels at once.
I know you love college football. You obviously have covered pro football. So if we had pro football here, you may not have the MLS. So I'll start with pro football. There's a lot of talk because of what's going on with COVID that the NFL may move the Super Bowl out of Stan's beautiful stadium. Come on, you're supposed to respond to that.
I'm laughing. I know I'm chuckling. Because
oh, okay.
I did do my Kroenke holiday cleanse.
Well, okay, so, you cleansed, and so, hopefully you showered a couple of times, multiple times every day since that time. But there's talk that, you know what, the Super Bowl may not go to L.A., and they're going to move it out of there because of COVID protocols. What's your response? What do you think?
Well, I just, as someone who's done the Kroenke cleanse, I sincerely hope that it all works out, and I just think it would be a shame to see that, you know, the stadium that Stan put so much of his hard-earned money into, not money he came to through marriage, but money he's earned, that would hate to see all that hard-earned money that he you know, poured into a stadium that had massive rainfall and had problems because it was built too close to an airport and had all kinds of COVID-caused issues with the construction people who had a terrible time working on it and all, terrible food and terrible parking. I would just hate for all that hard work that he put in to once again be robbed of a Super Bowl opportunity. Especially it would be a shame if it went to Jerry Jones, who really is the ultimate benefactor of all of this moving to L.A. because he got the sweet contract there at SoFi without having to put in any money on it. And golly gee, Dan, I sure can't believe that there's some sinister notion that maybe, just maybe, because Stan Kroenke threatened and could even pursue going through the process of trying to get out of that indemnification agreement with his fellow owners who so much supported him in moving the Rams to Los Angeles until they found out that he might not be on the hook for all of the legal fallout from it. Surely they wouldn't pressure the league to take away Stan Kroenke's Super Bowl because of quote-unquote COVID concerns, would they? They wouldn't do that.
No. I think you're misreading this.
I figured I was.
Yeah. Uh-huh. What do you think's going to happen with that? You think they go to Jerry Jones Stadium? What do you think happens?
No, I don't know. I mean, it's good luck trying to predict what California is going to do in terms of rules, right?
Right.
I mean, who knows? That's a different world out there. So I just know that nothing past the NFL when it comes to getting back at an owner that it feels misled the group. I would put nothing past Jerry Jones in terms of having Stan Kroenke's back one day and then stealing a Super Bowl the next. And I legitimately don't know. All I know is that the check for the Rams relocation money came. It arrived shortly before Christmas. I don't know, and I talked to somebody who would know if it could be known by anybody but the NFL. And I don't know if the money came. I would imagine that it came from the NFL, and then they will sort out who pays what of that on their own. And I think that could probably lead to a lot of grudge matches within the league. But as far as who paid that check, I guess it just comes out of the league's coffers, and they sort it out on their own. But, man, we know enough about the league to know that there's all kinds of stories that pop up that have other motives. And it just makes me wonder a little bit if this threat or warning is somewhat related to Stan maybe trying to shake down some of the other owners for getting out of that indemnification. It does raise the question.
There's no doubt about that. Connor Bazelak has committed to Indiana. Do you think that's a good fit for him?
It could be. I still think Connor's got better football to play. I was very confused by his season this year. I know he was hurt, and he played hurt a lot, perhaps all the year, and I think that clearly impacted him. But the biggest and most puzzling thing that went wrong with this season were some of the bad decisions that he made with the football, and that was kind of his strength, making really sound decisions in the previous season. So I'm not sure what happened there. I was a little bit surprised he transferred, not so much after Brady Cook started the bowl game, but I think that clearly would have had to have been decided by then. I wonder about, more than anything, the situation that it leaves behind at Mizzou. Look, Eli Drinkwitz is the offensive mastermind. He's the play caller. He's the quarterback's coach. And right now, on his depth chart, he's got a quarterback he played in the bowl game who barely played at any other point in the season. I guess that's a starter in Brady Cook, who looked okay in the bowl game but should have probably played more if he's going to be the starter moving forward. You've got Tyler Macon, who didn't look ready, and I think Tyler's a great kid, but he didn't look ready in the chances he got this year. And that's it until you've got Sam Horn, a freshman who's not going to be there for spring practice, coming in as a true freshman who wants to start. And starting a true SEC freshman in that league is a big risk. You just don't know what you're going to get there. It's a much different world than even high-level, you know, football in Georgia, which is what he's playing. So I think Eli Drinkwitz is probably looking at the transfer portal, even if he's not broadcasting it. If he can find a stud there that can come in, especially if it's a guy with like 1 year left where he doesn't put himself at risk of losing Sam Horn earlier than expected, then he might do that. He might have to, but he's got to get an answer at quarterback, and I'm not real sure that he has one right now with Bazelak being gone.
The transfer portal is amazing and what's going on with college football, but it is in some cases having an adverse effect for colleges, and maybe it's having an adverse effect for right now Eli Drinkwitz and the University of Missouri.
Yeah, I think so. Look, some transfers hurt more than others. That's just the truth of it. You know, a guy like Sean Robinson is not that big of a deal. He came to be a quarterback. He became a defensive back, and now he leaves. And that guy might have been a captain next year, so that's a leadership position lost. And you kind of put that one down as that one you hate to see. Some guys don't play. You go, okay, yeah, that's obvious they're going to leave. But honestly, Thursday's news was probably the worst for Mizzou. Mekhi Wingo transfers out. He was an all-SEC or all-SEC all-freshman this year. He played the most snaps among Mizzou's defensive tackles. You know, a St. Louis kid, who there's a lot of speculation that he's going to look to go to LSU, where now his former high school coach is on the staff, and Robert Steeples. But, you know, other than just having a connection to LSU, why was he looking to leave? He was getting everything he wanted for and more at Mizzou. So that's a little concerning. Drinkwitz is recruiting his tail off. He's got these impressive classes. But if the guys that you built your classes on that were so highly ranked then leave after a year, that's not good. Every coach is going through this. I mean, hell, the kid at Oklahoma who had a great season at quarterback is leaving. I think the one thing that tells us everything we need to know right now about the state of college football is what happened at Oklahoma. Spencer Rattler, who was supposed to be the star there, transferred because Caleb Williams took his job. So then Caleb Williams decided he's going to transfer, and the guy who was supposed to go to UCLA from UCF decided he's going to go to Oklahoma instead. It's just like it's musical chairs, so you don't want to beat up on Drinkwitz too much. But it's why when these recruiting class rankings roll out, I say, yeah, that's great. But you have to get the guys to the field, and then you got to get them to stick around, or else that means nothing.
Absolutely. I just find it fascinating what's going to happen. You know, where are we at 5 years from now? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I hope it hits kind of a high water point and then settles down. You know, I don't know what the answer is about transfers. If they're going to keep letting guys transfer once without having to sit out a year, then you're going to continue to see a lot of transfers. But maybe there will be enough guys realizing that they're leaving for pastures that maybe aren't as green as they look, that things kind of settle down a little bit. I have a hard time saying they should throw a bunch of rules back in it when you've got guys like Brian Kelly who leave a team in the middle of college football playoff push and go get paid 10 years, $10 million a year to go to another team. So I don't think that players should be punished when coaches tear up contracts left and right. But I think college football's got to be careful here, because the one thing that we love about college football is the tradition of it, where schools are changing conferences, they're changing coaches, they're flipping over rosters full in 1 year, and you're kind of starting to erode maybe some of that tradition, some of that familiarity. And this isn't me being, you know, old man yelling at cloud, as much as I just think that's part of what people buy into and love when they support, watch, give their money to watch and go to college football games. And if that starts to kind of erode, then you got to be careful there, because the powers will always be there, but the sport in general might lose a bit of its thunder.
The next time we visit will be next Friday. So Monday, Georgia, Alabama for the national championship. Who do you like?
I picked Georgia to win before the season started,
and
I'm
going to
stick with it now.
How do you pick against Nick Saban?
Well, because I just don't want to be a flip-flopper, because I think before the season started, I picked Georgia. So now they're in it,
boy.
So I got to at least ride with them.
I guess.
Nick Saban can't win every game. Maybe Georgia
yes, he
got
can.
The wake-up. Yeah, he can. But maybe Georgia got the wake-up call it needed. In the SEC championship game might have been the best thing that could have happened to Georgia, Dan. That's why I'll pick the Bulldogs, and just because I'm stubborn. But, I can't imagine that there's as talented as Georgia is, that it can take a beating like that against Alabama in the SEC championship game and not put a better performance out there in the national championship.
Are you in the boat that we don't or do expand the college playoff?
I think expand it. Not from the belief that it won't be the same two teams. I mean, it could be Georgia and Alabama every year for the next 3 years as long as Saban keeps coaching. I mean, Kirby is building a really impressive Death Star down there in Athens. Pretty much, you know, it's Georgia East or Alabama East. But I do just like I think it's more fun with more teams. I think anyone who hems and haws about it being watered down, baloney. We're all going to watch. That's like saying the NCAA tournament has too many teams. No, it doesn't. You know, I've been to the first four in Dayton, and it's awesome. And I watch it when it's on TV because it's still the tournament. I don't care what anybody says. And when you're playing with a chance to win the national championship in front of you, people will watch. So I like the idea of putting more teams in it and giving some of the group of five schools a shot. Now they're probably going to go in there and get thumped, and that's okay. You know, they get the prestige from it. It's still a really cool thing to make. And then, you know, every once in a while there will be a Cinderella team that takes down a Goliath, and that's awesome too.
All right, my man, what are you working on this weekend at the Post-Dispatch?
Well, I got a column up about Bradley Carnell and kind of his goal as the first coach of this MLS team. You know, it's funny, Dan, we think about new coaches and we never like to think about, you know, their legacy on day one, right? You know, we think they're going to be here forever. We think they'll never leave. And I think let's take a realistic look at what this guy's job is, what his legacy could be here as he gets a chance to really put his fingerprints on a team that is getting its first look ever to a city. So pretty cool opportunity. I talked with him. That'll be up at stltoday.com if folks want to check it out. A chat recap from earlier in the week as well, talking all kinds of things about future of Mizzou coaches and all that good stuff. So they can find all that and more at stltoday.com.
All right, buddy. Thank you. And let's catch up next Friday.
Sounds good, brother. Talk to you soon.